you talk about Leap being like your child, and your eldest child, and the one you've parented, over-parented. So they actually put a rope around me and asked the team, just let Matt lean a little bit back over the fire. So this is the umbilical cord that you've never cut when you had your first child, Leap.
Wow.
And then my team, who don't do anything like this, they got the opportunity to cut, and then they cut it. And it was a profound moment. And, you know, all going to different B Corps headquarters, you know, innocent at Fruit Towers and stuff, I realised we were having lovely conversations all in our bubble, as we do. I'm an outsider, so I prefer those uncomfortable conversations. It's lovely, lots of hugs and things, but actually the real progress happens in the uncomfortable.
Welcome to the Mojo Podcast. I'm Richard Stokes, and this season we're exploring Mojo under fire, those crucible moments that either break us or forge us into the leaders others want to follow. Each episode, I sit down with people who faced their defining moment, the crisis, the setback, the dark night, and found something unexpected on the other side. Not tips and tricks, but honest conversation about what it really takes to lead from the inside out. If you're looking for polish, this isn't it. If you're looking for truth, welcome. Matt Hocking speaks from the heart about running a business, nature, being a leading light in the B Corp world, and his native Cornwall. You'll quickly see and feel his energy and zest for life, his mojo. And he candidly shares what happened when that energy ran down and he had to sleep for a month. This is a rich conversation full of stories, wisdom, and many takeaways for you to reflect on. I loved it, and I hope you do too. Let's dive in. Matt Hocking, welcome to the Mojo Podcast. Great to see you, Matt. How are you?
I am feeling good. Looking out the window, a very typical Cornish winter mizzle day. I don't know if you know the word mizzle.
I have come across the word mizzle, and is it a description of rain?
Like a misty rain, and you get like mizzle face, which is a bit like that, sort of as you're walking. But it's mizzle time out there, so yeah.
Oh, I love it. I want to dive into Cornwall and Cornishness and what that means to you and your mojo.
Love to.
But just getting a data point from you now. So out of 10 today, how is your mojo faring today, Matt?
Yeah, I'd say the way I perceive and feel and hear the word mojo, for me, I'd say it's a strong like 8.5, 9. You know, it's got a lot of oomph, bounce and verve to it.
All right, so keep going. When I say that word, that's what comes up for you.
Yeah, it's quite like an energetic feeling. I always describe myself, except for my age going upwards. You know, at the moment I'm a 54-year-old, 8-year-old. So there's always, you know, usually a lot of energy around me. I call it my big kid energy. I might be bouncing around the house, running up the stairs, jumping around in the garden, you know, barefoot or something like that. So yeah, I'm feeling quite. I've just got a nice little bounce, and I come off also at the weekend with my beloved Georgie. We went to like a silent disco in Exeter Cathedral, 80s, kind of 90s. So that was good. I'm still in Always Live Together in Electric Dreams mode from that.
Oh, I love it. So people listening of our era will dial into exactly what sort of music was going on. So this verve, this bounce, and we've known each other for, I guess, a little while. But I've known you mostly from being, you know, on group calls in a men's group that we're in together. But I've always felt that energy from you. So I'm getting a sense of how you feel your own energy and how you exude it. That's an important part of who you are and what your mojo is about.
Yeah. Definitely. But I think, I feel as well, Richard, that there's a kind of like learning to rather be like exuberant energy and bouncy and cheerleader or, you know, cycling energy or whatever, that there's a current learning to, you know, slow that down as well and be more responsive to the energy. And definitely I'm learning more that there's a time for the energy and there's a time to, in a way, that big kid in me to, you know, just chill for a bit as well.
So when you said that sort of 54, 8-year-old this description of yourself and I say even at this sort of stage in life, you're learning, I'm guessing, more about your energy, more about your mojo and when to dial up, when to dial
down. a hell of a lot, Richard, just because, like you said, the mojo, whatever you want to call it. I mean, my business, Leap, which I know we'll go into a bit, our symbol, our icon is a lightning bolt. So that, you know, it says a lot. When I did with Imaginal Collective a 12-month sort of shamanic journey, and the last bit of that, this was when was that, 2024, was like a 24-hour dance. It's called a nectar dance, to the fire and back, to the fire and back for 24 hours. Little breaks for, you know, a little, was it dry fast? No food, but we could have water. And I was a bit grumpy when we started it in the rain, in the mizzle. But by 24 hours later, I was just full of energy and I was bouncing like Tigger. And they actually gave me the name Electric Shapeshifter. not my like shamanic name, I don't think, but more like just what I embody there. So I can change people's voice, that sort of chameleon-esque. So lots of energy. And again, go back to the lightning bolt. I like superheroes. I like comics. And so when I set my business up in 2004, it was about each and every one of us, but obviously just me as a, you know, guy freelancing in his bedroom, being an everyday superhero. And that sort of iconic kind of level of using an ancient symbol, really. And then the stuff around electricity and lightning as well, you know, it's a rebirth, it's a masculine and feminine, and the way it hits the land and stuff, newness comes, new growth. So, you know, where I strike is Leap as Matt, it's about not necessarily doing things just for the sake of doing them, but just kind of giving a fresh energy to, you know, sometimes something that's tired. Sometimes it's just somebody needs a bit of cheerleading and stuff like that. I won't know until I arrive, and then my body tends to, and my energy starts to respond.
And, you know, in there, you kind of...
I bounced everywhere.
Well, I love to people to get a sense of who my guest is right at the beginning. And you have, you've spoken to it, this energy, the lightning bolt, what you bring, I guess, as a leader. And, you know, this podcast is about leadership in its widest view. Okay. And I certainly know you as a leader within your industry, within the B Corp world, which we'll unpack as well, and an amazing connector of people with that energy.
Seems to be what I've become without knowing it, but yeah, things just happen, and yeah, I kind of flow from place to place without a plan or knowing. Sometimes it's just things arrive and the energy is there, and then sometimes it's output. But then, you know, 2024, after running my own event, Good Fest, which I co-founded like 7 years ago, then I'm on the Council of Wisdom for Blue Earth Summit. So these are sidelines to my main creativity that I do. I hit an energetic wall, you know. So I hadn't experienced anything like it, but the energy of the venue with 5,000 people going through it, it was too much like... What would I say is like if the people were ants made of electric, that was all around me. So all this other electricity and stuff and energy was bouncing into me. It was too much. And I've been holding space for something I do called Uncomfortable Conversations for 3 hours. So it was I wasn't speaking in all that, just the start and the end, but I project me to support those that are going to do the uncomfortable conversations. And then, then I slept for a month. so this is all new. Like, I think sometimes on our journeys and, you know, the learning I've had from Bodhi and other elders, you know, tribal elders, friends that are shamans and stuff, sometimes the more we go into these spaces and go, oh, your energy being in this, and then suddenly it's like opening up another dimension to yourself. And maybe just age, you know, 54, I've always... Yeah, gone with the big kid. I do a handstand in morning and evening before I get to bed and stuff. I play around. I'm a bit silly, but I'm also a bit sensible. Maybe it was just the world saying, slow down, Matt. And yeah, I love the Ferris Bueller quote, you know, life moves pretty fast. If we don't pause once in a mile, it could pass us by. It's one of my sort of fave quotes out there. Wow,
absolutely. Yeah, same. I mean, as again, we talked about a bit of kids of the 80s, of a cultural icon of the 80s, Ferris Bueller. I often go back to that myself. So just maybe that in that moment of, so we've, you know, we know you already as a highly energized, energetic bringer of the energy. So when you say you hit that wall and then had to sleep for a month, what was that like? What was kind of going on?
Yeah, great question. And I'm still, Richard, really reflecting on the journey that I was gifted at that time. So the first thing was knowing that if I tried to sustain the 3 days at the event, my heart and my gut's intelligence, I try not to listen to this too much, were telling me you're not going to be able to do what you normally do, Matt, which is, you know, be unstoppable and things. You know, I'm also neurodiverse, so, you know, there's that kind of, you know, I have the hyperfocus, so, you know, sometimes when I've just got something to do, I might not sleep for a couple of days, or, you know, I just noticed that something wasn't right and I needed to extricate myself from there, even though, you know, I got a really wonderful friend, Rosie, and she's one of the content editors there. And I don't like letting people down, but I just knew something big was happening. And so almost like a flu or COVID or something, but it was energy. And so I decided not to go back after the first day. We'd done our stuff, but there was other bits I was related to in there, but nothing that I needed to be at. Got home and I was just whack, Richard. I was like bone weary. But there was something deeper in that, like a sense that sleep and shed, that nobody was saying their words. There's no words coming through. And my partner, Georgie, was like, you can't sleep this much. You can't do that, because I've always been somebody that's only been more of a 4 or 5 hour sleeper. Yeah. I said, look, all I know is I've got to trust what I'm feeling, and the feeling is to sleep. And in that time, there's a bit of me for, you know, so also this period, Richard, and, you know, you have to draw me in from talking, okay, Matt, you know, stop now or whatever.
Good.
But, you know, there's this grieving period that I knew that I was in a process of letting go of Leap, which, you know, the year 2025, there'd be a lot happening in the passing of the baton stewardship. I've helped, you know, co-grow two beautiful humans, Esme and Grace. They're, you know, wonderfully, you know, strong, independent and unique girls. They're the same age. So my business is my firstborn. Esme's my secondborn, and Grace is my third. So 19, 20 and 21, all born within quick period. So I think there was a lot going through that. I'd done some work with people like the Ciel Foundation, Sky Foundation over, well, they're based in the UK, but over in Spain. So I'd been on a cohort with them, which I was one of the co-facilitators for New Energy for Regenerative Planet. And I'd done other work with the Concord Institute Integral Studies. And although it's all beyond my normal brain area, my heart intelligence, all of that was really working. And in this period, somebody that used to do marathons and huge cycles and stuff, doing nothing, I lost a stone in the first month. Wow. And then that carried on, and I lost 3 stone in the end. And, you know, I've always had big, chunky, muscled cycling legs. I didn't get my first car till I was 33. I cycled everywhere. All of that's gone now. But it felt right. My partner found it, I think, the hardest. And other people around said, trying to tell my parents, it's okay. I've done the test to say I haven't got this or this or this. I'm not a hypochondriac. But for them, I've ruled out these. And I said, I've just got to do this. And I feel at a certain time. And for the first time in a long time, Richard, what I did get, rather than exhausted sleep, is I started dreaming again. And I started to, if anything, dream futures, pasts and presents. So it was a really, really vibrant, tactile dreams.
So would you, I mean, I don't put a label on it, but just to help people understand, would you see it as some kind of burnout
that
kind of went?
And the doctor said, when we went through it, she's really good, actually. I've always been a little bit like, I don't like to trouble the doctor, you know, typical, like, don't do this or that. And I ended up with this amazing, wonderful lady, Dr. H, and she gave me far too much of her time. I was actually saying in the end, look, you don't need to ring me at 5 o'clock to check in on me and stuff like that. But she, in a way, coached me to make my own assumptions of what it might be. We ruled out everything that was an internal test, you know, gut pains, you know, potential, you know, for a man of my age, you know, prostate, colon, things like that. We had scans and stuff. I'd had long COVID in 21 for 9 months. So she said there's probably some overlap from there. But she said it's either burnout or, she said, and I wasn't diagnosed then, it's ADHD masking burnout, which I'd never heard of the term. And that's and seems to be the stronger of the directions with my energy and my hyperfocus and how I see information sometimes. And she said it comes from like you've had a life where you've masked it without knowing. You've done all the school stuff. But, you know, it's people just see you as kind of like the distracted child at the school. Yes, I was that. I was the creative, distractive, playful joker. I've done well in work. I've done well with all the things I've done. So I never really equated it to anything. It's just the way I was. You know, I didn't used to sleep for a couple of days before I used to be on stage doing talks and things and pitches. I thought that's what everyone was like. So, you know, you don't know anybody but you.
Yeah.
And so then it was really leaning into that space and not to go, oh, I'm another person getting diagnosed for neurodiverse. Just curiosity, really. But now... And then other things started arriving, you know, Bodhi and other people coming in that seemed to be those teachers arriving when the pupil was maybe not ready, but at least the pupil wasn't vibrating on the spot or jumping over walls and things. So I had the consciousness to be slower and pay more attention, I guess is the term. And I'm still learning in that space. Like some days I'm full of energy, other times after convening maybe a few groups and things, you know, I'm whacked. And so, but now I know to, you know, even today I had slow time before and I've got slow integration time after.
Right. So this the episode you went through in 2024, that was the first time you had a sense of neurodiversity was...
But everyone says, oh, of course you're neurodiverse. Yeah. Nobody ever says
I do hear that a lot, actually, from people who
are. Yeah. And whatever I had or whatever the life I've had, and if I'm neurodiverse or not, there is something there. And whatever I was to that point, say fight or flight for 20 years, provider, going from zero to hero with the business, you know, Leap was very accidental. I just had the idea that there's a better way to design, you know, planet center, planet first. And it has, you know, it's been intense, but I didn't really think about it because it's the only world I knew, you know, get the job done. You know, even though we've got a team of 10 and at its peak 12, you know, I still work like a freelancer. So.
So the energy just drove you to work. When you said, you know, I thought everyone pitched this way. You know, I thought no one was having any sleep before kind of a big.
Yeah, because you don't have those conversations really. And but then I also convinced myself that it was a good thing because when I got on stage, you know, I learned over the years as well. Not to have too many words on PowerPoint template stuff, just have a nice series of image. Nobody would know what the conversation was other than the title. Sometimes somebody would be doing, I'd be at an event. And I remember when we were talking about B Corp in Cornwall back in 2018, and the three speakers before me, so Tom Kay from Finisterre, Simon from Changemakers, the global coaching organization, and who was the other one? Ed Gillespie, they all talked about their B Corp thing. So by the time I was the fourth speaker, I was like, oh, there's no point in me doing my talk. So I ended up doing an unplanned talk about how kittens are killing the planet.
Wow. So you just riffed off something.
Yeah. And I'm not, if you took me back to school and drama, you know, I was the person that feared being on stage and I had nothing to offer, you know, comedy wise or improvised. So, but yet in those moments, my flow, I could trust enough to just deliver something I did a couple of little bits of stats when I realized what I was going to do. Let's talk about the detail a B Corp can do. Yes. Let's go into carbon, you know, and why me as a design agency made sure from day one, my computers, our websites from renewable energy servers, got the data for what was the most at the time, Instagram posted image in the UK. It was kittens. And then I got a bit of carbon data from Tim Berners-Lee's book, How Bad Are Bananas?
Yeah.
And literally that was all I was doing. And then I just went up on stage and I got a bit of mock paper. I threw it and said, well, that's my talk gone. Don't worry, I'm going to recycle that afterwards. That was just a show with you lot and 180 people.
Wow. Because what you talk about there is most people's absolute greatest fear. But first, getting up on stage anyway.
Yeah, I've been doing that for 2 days.
Yeah. And then I go, no, I'm not actually going to do what I've spent all my time preparing. I'm going to do this instead.
Yeah. And actually, with the preparing, what I've learned as well is just to ease off on that. As long as I've got some images that hook, it might be a pangolin, might be a spaceship, it might be a piece of Lego. It might be something that's obviously directly related to the talk. So I did have a kitten already in the presentation.
Yes.
However, it was to do with about keep hanging in there rather than kittens are killing the planet. But kittens are killing the planet has been very memorable. And actually a lot of people have reached out over the years. So it was the right thing to do. And I guess I've got used to trusting it. But other times, you know, last year at Anthropy, another amazing event that's at Eden Project, and I'm friends with the founder, John O'Brien, and he put me on the Creativity Causes panel, and I just got a little bit of, actually for me, a different type of imposter syndrome. You know, look at the people here, what could I offer? But I don't remember what I said, but people came up to me at the end and said, wow, the interview was really on you, and you were just like coming out with the answers to the hardest questions, and you know, nobody else has put themselves forward. And I said, I honestly don't remember, it just flowed, you know.
Yeah, so this sense of flow, this sense of trusting yourself, this feels like this is at the heart of your leadership, perhaps
evolving leadership. Yeah, I think some people I feel will find me too erratic, or they might not like somebody that I might give a title to the press, what it is, but what will come on the day, it will hook around that, but it might be brought in because of the elements of the day. Again, like the Uncomfortable Conversations platform is, you know, to have lean in and embrace discomfort rather than pass it by. And all the conversations we do is nobody has PowerPoint, nobody needs to plan. They just have a maximum of 6 to 7 minutes to just talk about something that is uncomfortable, that's in the consciousness of society's head, but is not outside in discourse. And then the other thing they've got to do is leave with a story of hopefulness, not of their own, so that we don't maybe have an uncomfortable conversation, bring somebody down and we leave them down, because up that point, then one of my speakers will walk off and they won't do questions. And then when the next speaker feels ready, we use the gift of silence in some of this format, the next speaker comes off and we'll be talking about what they've got.
Wow. And so is this something that's happening locally to you in Cornwall? Is this happening in other places in the UK?
I just get asked to do it sometimes, and anybody can do it. It's not like I own it or anything. And I do it with some good friends, Charlotte Sewell, people from the BioLeadership Fellowship. What I got used to, again, jumping around, my business is called Leap, you know, so you've got an energetic frog alone here. So for me, I've been part of the B Corp growth and movement in the UK since 2015. I've been following B Corp since its inception, year one inception in the US. And as soon as it came to the UK, I started to do, you know, the thing. But, and then I became a cheerleader. You know, there were six of us initially that were chosen as ambassadors. There's me and Andy Middleton at the kind of more of the rural Wales and Cornwall. Everybody else is in the city. During that time, we've had some, you know, fantastic events in Europe and in the UK, Be Inspired, all sorts of things to generate this amazing impetus that is, people using their business for good in the UK. And the UK is, you know, the the largest marketplace and the fastest growth place for B Corps in the world. London's the capital city for the most B Corps in the world. Cornwall, I was the only B Corp for 2 years and the first design agency in Europe. I say we. And now we have, you know, nearly 100 in Cornwall alone. So, and not all just me, but I created a little bit of a convening party. At the a certain point over those 10 years, from 2015 to last year, as much as I loved turning up in London at X plus Y or the Natural History Museum or, all going to different B Corps headquarters, you know, Innocent at Fruit Towers and stuff, I realised we were having lovely conversations all in our bubble, as we do. And I'm an outsider, so I prefer those uncomfortable conversations. It's lovely, lots of hugs and things, but actually the real progress happens in the uncomfortable. And we're not saying it's so uncomfortable that it's awful, and we're not also talking about those conversations maybe being about you need to change to be a vegan or you need to get an electric car. It's really looking at those edges that are within ourselves.
Yeah.
So 1 year, the first time I did this, and it was purely experimental. There's just speakers I've met over the years. So like the wonderful Alexandra Primor. I heard her talking at the Design Museum. And I've never heard a lawyer talk like her. And she's an earth lawyer from the Earth Law Center. And I was like, oh my God, you're like a stealth punk in a lawyer's form. You're just like slowly you were weaving about it all, and then you just hit the whole audience with it. I said, I've got this format I'm working on for Blue Earth Summit 2023. Would you do a talk? And I want it to be something uncomfortable. And she went, yeah, I'm well up for doing something uncomfortable. And I think, if I remember rightly, hers was about, are we a disease? Is humanity a disease on the planet kind of thing? But in the kind of like, if you were looking at a living system and things like maybe like Dutch elm disease and ash things. So, and it was just a provocation because also in First Nation, in Indigenous tribes, humanity is very much needed as well. We just need to behave better. We mustn't see ourselves as superior. We are part of a whole living system, and we're a part within it. So we have our role, as does everything else. And that's, so the world does need us, but just not in the format we're doing at the moment.
Yeah. So that you know, that growth in the uncomfortable area, I'd love to pull that thread a little bit more, because you know, obviously the work that we do, is a lot of it is about understanding where our comfort zone is and getting out of our comfort zone, as you've been talking to already, into our stretch zone, because that's where learning and growth is.
Yeah, that's what it is as well, yeah.
That expansion, exactly.
Yeah.
So tell me a bit about, let's focus on Leap for a bit, because I know, you know, you set it up, and you sort of mentioned, I think, 2004 when you came out of Eden Project.
Yeah.
And you've taken a long way through to actually, I think, fairly recently, creating stewardship amongst some of your colleagues and stepping away from it. And I'd love to just to understand that, because I speak to a lot of founders on the podcast, and it's the stepping away point, which I get a lot of founders go, yes, I know it's what I need to do to allow growth in people, allow growth in the business, even in myself, but I just can't do it. And they hold on and they hold on, and, you know, various things can occur, but it's rarely the growth
that
they were hoping for anybody. So can you just talk us a little bit about how you've navigated that your way?
So firstly, I'll probably do myself a disservice here, but the best thing for me to do is to do it with not knowing too much. And then, you know, that kind of clarity comes from action. So get on the path, start pathfinding, start wayfinding, get into the landscape, and then figure it out. And so over the last few years, I've watched myself, I guess, have less joy in the business. Whereas once, you know, being a planet-saving creative was a joy when I first got, because there was very few of us doing graphic design and websites and hosting and stuff that was very planet focused, renewable energy, the right papers, the right inks and the right materials. And so I was the awkward outsider again. And then as it became mainstream, and also I was getting asked to do lots of talks, you know, 2004, 5, 6, 7, 8 and stuff, you know, Paper and the Planet, Paper Digital, and working with design agencies to help them understand the opportunity. And over this time, with the joy and the management and the expansion and everything coming to me, I wasn't enjoying it. I mean, I wouldn't say I enjoy managing a business. I've always been somebody in life that would maybe be a really good employee or, you know, senior, someone that makes the leadership team or the founder really shine. You know, that's, I think my best place is like being a prop or something like that. And I also know, you know, when I need to bring in help and skills. What was happening, I was becoming a bit too directive and like, oh, this is how to do it and that's how to do it. So not giving much space for, you know, personal creative evolution. We had, you know, quite turbulent times as we all experienced, although Leap, you know, past financial crisis, we didn't furlough. You know, four was the first and only time we've made redundancies in the business. 20 years, so, which was very hard on me, but because I felt like I'd failed sustainability. I was just not becoming the best version of myself. And I was over helping and over fixing, you know. It's very easy, you know, as a designer, you know, God, I'm a guy and I'm a creative and I've got a very fast mind that sees multidimensional things. And I see I can feel the start of anything virtually. Yeah. And then I can visual the end, the middle, I have no idea, you know. So, and it's like stepping outside of your body. I knew that I was lessening my time with my partner because I was moaning about things, you know, about the business, and she has enough on, you know, I'm a micro business compared to her. You know, she's an MD of a, you know, London, Bristol, Cornwall agency, 30 staff and stuff, you know, and she's got enough on, and she's bringing up two younger kids of mine. So I knew this wasn't me. You know, the last podcast I heard with yourself, there was a fair bit of talk around shadow as well. So I felt my shadow was getting too long and too absorbent. And like, you know, when the sun's going down and you've got the longer shadow, and my sense was, all right, I can kind of carry on doing what I do, but in the end, everybody's going to probably not like me very much, even though we're getting shit done, getting good creativity done. We're helping people on planet, local to global, joy and meaningful and useful. But I did not have the energy, especially after that burnout time, to do another 20 years. So I thought, well, I could close the business up, but then I've got not a lot else. I'd never really sorted out a pension. Even Leap hasn't got like a number to it, like as a value. So I kind of like, So I started to, I guess, rewire the living system of Leap with a little bit of help of various friends, you know, stuff with Giles Hutchins from the Future Fit Foundation and author of Leading by Nature, another lady, Janine Barron, Bodhi, and people like that. They said all the teachers were in my life. They were coming to my good vest. So the world or universe was already delivering me the guides, the information. I just had to ask and get to a stage of not thinking I could figure it all out.
And
ask for help, I think, in the biggest. So, and then as I started to free, so lots of space came from that sleeping period. But I think the idea of the living system of Leap, you know, changing the management structure, which is quite, you know, standard organigram, you know, management structure. And so my MD, Simon, he had now too much on his plate because he's trying to look after me being not as energetic as I once was, figuring me out. He's a really good helper, people pleaser, kind of, you know, coach type himself, as well as being a managing director. Other team members are saying, you know, Simon doesn't need to do all the meetings. So I said, right, well, let's shift and create a three-headed organism, which I call the triumvirate, you know, the trio. So that's one of the living system elements. Actually, if you look at my jumper, it's not that. This is from Bilbao Night Marathon. But that could be look like a living ecosystem. You've got all the constituent parts. You've got a central thing. We talk about Spaceship Earth, the Buckminster Fuller. So things just started to arrive. And then as they arrived, so did the other conversations. The lawyers, the earth lawyers started popping up in all my events and stuff. So the stewardship lawyers, the EAT. So suddenly I'm getting, again, all the messages. And so I start playing with these new forms metaphysically. And we are where we are. You know, I shared the video, which, again, you wouldn't normally have a three-hour shamanic ceremony, even have a camera.
Tell people, because you shared this video with me. It's beautiful. I know it's a two-minute, which I'll try and put it in the show notes, a two-minute summary of what you did with this new leadership team, this of three.
Yeah, yeah, Helen, Nathan.
Explain a bit of that, because this is, you know, this is not what most people's experience of business is going to be. But I think it's important for people to see, because there are different ways of coming at things, and you work with some shamans.
Yes, which I've been lucky enough locally to, well, known one from Eden for like 25 years when I was back there when it first opened. And I'd just done a year with his Imaginal Collective, learning different tribal practice. And he's finished, him and his partner, June, had just finished like 30 years of training in New Mexico and stuff. And so my consciousness, without this bit, so it's easier for me to say my heart intelligence. So my mighty heart, the feeling was I would like to show the sort of the magical, the more than human, the fantasy, the whimsical, whatever you want to call it, world that I get to dance in. You know, I'm very lucky that I feel that I get invited into many, many things, from big boardrooms to originally, you know, the increase of the B Corp movement. You know, I've talked at the Stock Exchange out in Guernsey, Jersey, and the Institute of Directors, and on Boardroom 2030. But I've also got this thing where, with other clients, I've been in the Sinai Desert with the Jebeliah tribe and done a three-day dry fast in the desert while, for the client, learning how I and my business could create for them, the Makar Trust this was, which means meeting place in Bedouin. And without them giving me a brief, so I get these like extraordinary, experiences, you know. And we had personhood for Wales with the Maoris and Blue Green Futures in America at the same time. So, and that's with, you know, Dr. Ralph Shammy, I think, well, he might be a doctor, but he's, you know, he was like one of the heads of the International Monetary Fund for 28 years. Now he's talking about the value of a dead whale versus a living whale. Yeah. So really, sorry, I probably should shut up. But
No. I'm just, there's so much in here, Matt. And just as you're getting into this, when your way of...
And my mind's going off as well.
Yeah. But your way of working with clients, because obviously everything you've done with Leap, there's always been a client involved. And a lot of people listening to this will have their own client. But just as you were talking about the things you've done with clients to be in, I've got this real sense of partnership going step by step with them. Was that a strategy, or is this just this evolved?
Most of the time, it might lessen what I am and the people that journey with me, Richard. But I'm just doing most of the time without knowing, and then the knowing starts to arrive. But there's something in me, like other people have used me as a moral, ethical compass. I've sat on various, you know, as a non-exec director for various organizations. Helped hundreds of businesses with their B Corp journeys to use that to navigate complex landscapes. But things just start to arrive. Like, there's something in me around the do no harm. So what I tend to do is, as long as it's kind of meaningful and useful, so I'm not just doing something for the sake of doing it. And if I can get joyful, that's very sweet. They just sort of arrive, but it's like, and I don't really speak about this much, but I am going into a new space with myself, and that video is part of it, which will be on LinkedIn probably next week or the week after. And what I've got with Goodfest and Uncomfortable Conversations is just trusting that everything, the signs, the tools, the space, the sense of place are all around me all the time. And at the same time, I get really scared about that as well, you know, because it feels too, sometimes like all the bits come into place too easily. But then if we look back in the context of a lifetime, or half a lifetime in this case, 50 odd years, what I experienced with my parents, you know, allow me to, you know, grow up in nature, so to speak, in the clays in Cornwall. I lived with my dad from the age of 7, you know, unusual in the 70s and stuff. And yeah, just all these things, and they just unpack that everything's already there for me, either in here or in here or in my gut. And that shedding time allowed me to listen to it. So the things come more clearly now, even when I'm in men's circle, because I circle up in a men's circle or a band of brothers, and I call them blinks. But sometimes when the men are talking, I literally see something that's only there for like a mini second. And it's like a part of it. You know, one guy, I see a little glowing 7-year-old boy behind him. But my mind would go, you just caught a bit of the light, Matt, and you just saw something. But now I'm speaking it and saying, you know, I was on stage a couple of years ago, and the speaker before me was supposed to be Tom Kaye, founder of Finisterre, but he couldn't make it. And there was a friend. So this amazing lady, Joey Hewlin, came in, and it's like I knew her all my life. And she did her talk first, and she said, I only got told to do this, you know, 24 hours ago. And I said, I've got a funny, if I feel with you, you've got the stage. She's this brilliant talk. And our talks are about our childhood. So it's very personal. It's about how our childhood has informed our business life. And I went up on stage and I said, look, this is going to sound weird to the, you know, 90 people gathered in the audience for this As One talk. I know Joey and I are going to do something together. I feel we've already been journeying, or the journey's going to fold. You know, and she shouted from that. She goes, I feel that too, Matt. And I've never done that. You know, I completely sidetrack what the talk should have been. I would normally be really vulnerable in that space. But I know I've gone off into lots of little ecosystems. But what I'm trying to learn to do better, my partner would probably say, Matt, you just need to slow down and it will all kind of arrive. Is the things that are floating around is like what happens if I also float around and drift for a while with a couple of anchor points. Where do I end up? What might happen? So with the video, all I knew is that it was a rare thing. I wanted the team to have this experience rather than Matt, founder. Oh, we're going to do this and it's my way. I said, the invitation is to come to some land, and I've organized this, but I even told my shaman friends, well, originally it was going to be one, and actually it turned into a masculine and feminine dispatcher ceremony, which is I didn't know about, but it's like you would normally, it's like wrapping up a life, it's for a person, and then sowing the seeds of the next one. So never done it for a business, but they started changing things. So they said, what's the brief, Matt? And I said, the brief is, I trust you. I need to give a sense of the business away. All I knew is, as the planet is our client, that's our biggest client is the planet. Every other client and everything else is within the sphere, so to speak. And so I just knew that nature, the tree, the sea, the land, needed to witness this passing a portion. It's only 15% of the business, but there's no money. I've just given them 15, and then they'll get to buy a majority share, so that I'm not the majority in the next couple.
You've essentially gifted 15% of the business.
Yeah, to the Trium to start with. I actually converted 25% of the business into shares, and then in the end, it will be 51%. So that gives majority ownership. So, but then for them to experience, and it's amazing because Helen, I don't know if she might be saying this because it was quite personal. But she texts me often, and Helen is like she likes her structure and her places. And so Helen heads up client services for Leap. So Nathan is creative director, Helen client services, and Simon managing director, and that makes the Trium. And in the wider ecosystem of the other people and our critical friends. And after we did it, and each person had somebody to walk with, and then I was directed off with somebody else, and I had some things to do, and they gave me some tasks. So we had to walk, we went down to sea, came back up to land, fire going. My shaman friends who live in Cornwall, they added things to the Dispatch show. So the first one was putting bits of Leap and bits of Us. So this is the old Leap. And then that was put on the fire.
Right.
And then there was a new one. So we had all these seeds and stuff from all over the world they brought. And they said, just take what you want to put in there. And this is the new bundle of Leap. And then there was a couple of other bits. A bit I wasn't expecting was Rich and June, the shaman. They go, well, we've got one extra bit, Matt. And because it's so, you talk about Leap being like your child, and your eldest child, and the one you've parented, over-parented, and your living, you know, actual children are have been left a much more independent, free life to learn and fail, you know, by themselves. So they actually put a rope around me and asked the team, just let Matt lean a little bit back over the fire, and they put a rope around me and go, so this is the umbilical cord that you've never cut when you had your first child Leap. And that was really, I did not expect that. And then my team, who don't do anything like this, they got the opportunity to cut, and then they cut it. And it was a profound moment. And this chunky rope. And then the team said, Rich said, I'll put all the rope in the fire. And this phase of your life is done, Matt. It's not as simple as that. But and the team said, actually, could we take half this rope to put up in the studio so that it's an artifact of this time?
Mm.
So I, you know, again, this, none of this was planned. So these things unfolded with trust, with heart, with nature, and with belief that if I didn't make a move to give some of this business over, ultimately it would spiral to its own death cycle. Wow. You know, we can. And then the formal stuff, Richard, was like keeping the end of the mojo, you know, to use your term. We had such good energy and mojo coming from that. Like Helen said, she said, I was nervous, Matt. I didn't know what to expect. But she said, I felt held, I felt seen, and I trusted. And that's, you know, being around a fire in a woodland with some guy, a guy, you know, 60-year-old man and woman, you know, in their regalia.
Yeah. But there's something about that part, that ceremony, important part of the ceremony of the decision that you got to, the trusting that, and obviously there's a, you know, there's legal parts of this which most people are used to sitting around a board.
We signed off this week. Yeah.
There you go. Right. Yeah. Obviously has to happen, but there's something for me about that connection of the two and having the team feeling something before the we get up into our heads and we're, you know, agreeing something, which again is, and why I wanted to bring this to the audience, this is so rare but so powerful. And just think of what you can do, whether it's working with shaman in deepest Cornwall or just doing something else in nature which expresses the work. Because I know, Matt, also just sort of changing gears a little bit, you do, or you're involved in quite a lot of, you know, you've been experienced retreats in nature. What is it about, and I know nature's absolutely to your core, but what is it about nature, to think, to bring it back to leadership? How can nature help leaders? Do you think that is exposure to nature?
Great question. I think the first thing is that it has the ability to calm us and relax us, to grant us the space if we choose to allow ourselves to, you know, not have the mobile phone for a little bit and things like that, to just remember what it is to be that younger self now with the maturity of the years and what we've learned, is just go, actually, what am I doing? You know, this work is, that's the thing I provide, or that's the thing, the service, the purpose for whoever. But ultimately, if it comes to us and self, our ecosystems and looking after ourselves, I feel nature, if we allow it, reminds us and helps with the remembering of why we're really here. And that could be very different for, you know, all different types of people. You know, some people will say to me sometimes, well, you're lucky, you're really privileged. You know, you've had an agency, so you come from this. And I said, well, actually, my mum was a taxi driver and my dad was a bouncer. So and I lived in the clays. You know, don't necessarily think that's where. Yeah, I had a privileged life living in nature and being unbounded to be in it. But I think time in it makes a difference, just a snapshot. And I know when I'm not in nature that I lessen my own self and I might become a bit edgy, twitchy, gnarly. So I've got, you know, various things. But, and with our team, just learning that when we moved the studio to make it a much more friendly journey for the team members to get to. So it was less travel, working on happiness, which we weren't expecting, but by moving it more central to them and not so easy for me. We noticed, like, you know, when you like you're doing an interview and you're sitting opposite a table and things, and it's like it's quite a pressure of energy and focus and comfortness. And so everything in the business is done with, like, you know, walk it out. So we're lucky, you know, we can walk down nature, those studios on the edge of the water in Truro. We would love to bring more clients in nature, but we're seeing, you know, this massive rise of, you know, the business of nature. And then we're seeing nature on the board. So, what, you know, Faith in Nature were the first company in the world, I think, to do that and have an earth proxy. Actually turned out to be Alexander Premore, who I talked about from our Uncomfortable Conversations talk. So we're seeing that, and going back to what I wanted to do, I wanted not just nature on the board and the business of nature and nature's boardroom. I wanted nature as a witness, and what we feel in nature, again, when we do the business of nature. And that's kind of what the dovetailing of the leap of faith to a natural way to do business.
Yeah.
However, not always possible. You know, there's been events I've done where I've spent like 4 or 5 days on a more business retreat, Google meets nature, but everything's in the building, even though nature's all around you. And yeah. I mean, I even got told off going out into nature, and they were like, oh no, we need to contain the energy of the business of nature in the building. Inside. And I was like, but look, massive windows outside. And then by that point, as our little group had gone out, the new energy group, the other groups haven't, and then it sort of did its own thing. And then I felt like the naughty, you know, 8-year-old child again. I was like, oh, I've broken the rules, but this is the right rules. So yeah, there's a lot to be, you know, that learning from nature, learning, you know, there's so much out there, but I think we feel that, and I'm, you know, I can be a hypocrite for this as well, that it's a guilty pleasure to do the work we need to do using nature and stuff like that. You know, having to speak to people around doing, you know, the retreats like you might do, which Bodhi might do. And it's taken me a long time to realize as a founder that it's really critical we invest in ourselves. You know, you're going to be doing something at Campwell in a couple of months' time. You're going to do stuff over in Ibiza and things. And that's the you know, the opportunity. And I realized for nearly 20 years of my business, I've been denying myself, you know, working double days, over-providing for the business, over-stabilizing, going, I can't have a holiday, I can't do this, I need to take my laptop. So when I did start investing in myself in 2018 with the Concord Institute of Integral Studies, I was invited in by one of our clients who said my love had disappeared from when he first met me.
Oh, wow. Well, what a thing for a client to one spot and then share. And volunteer with a I'm not gonna say a solution, an invitation.
Yeah, because it was this client is the client I'd worked with with the Jebelaya tribe in the Sinai Desert, a guy called Danny Shmulevich. He also runs the Earth Oven Project and many other things. And he said it, and for some reason he just said, "Can I invite you?" And I was like, "When?" And he said, "It's these days." And I looked at my calendar and went, "Yeah," and he goes, "Should I tell you about it?" And I went, "No, I trust you."
There you go. Trust again.
It was so wacky and weird to a certain degree. If anybody looks at it, that's my word, so you'd have to experience it yourselves. I had never done anything like this before, Richard. So it was, I'd never even heard the words trigger and shadow by this point. And then in these couple of days, the course was called I Evolve. And once you've done that course, which is in London, you can get access to about the being in business, the heart of being, it's all around the being as being. And I did Jumpstart, which was a 7-day, 6:30 in the morning to 11:30 at night, mind, body, food, and energy shift for 7 days.
A reset. Wow.
Yeah, and it's called Jumpstart. And actually, the journey we've been talking about in my haphazard way of jumping and the video and the letting go of the business, actually it was there. I think it was in October. I was at Oxenhoath, I think just outside of Tunbridge, for this retreat with people from all over, all different people from, yeah, different walks of life. I think about 50 of us. And I knew they were there to jumpstart their consciousness. I realized I had to jumpstart my relationship with my business because it was taking too much of my consciousness.
Yeah.
So that's 2018. And really the fulfillment of that journey without a plan, but knowing that I needed to do it, started then.
Yeah. Wow. And Matt, you know, we have covered some wonderful ground in here. No, I absolutely love this conversation, but you know, and where I want to just end with is, and you've spoken to much of this, but I just want to get your take on it as well. In terms of, again, thinking about leadership in broad brushstrokes, what does leadership need in the future as we kind of step into the unknown, as we always do?
All right. So the thing that rose up as you started saying that is more heart and love in leadership. I guess I'm taking it from a personal perspective as well. I think there's a missing element, and that is around love. And whether, you know, I was with an amazing company a couple of weeks ago hearing about the underbelly of what keeps Cornwall going in the tourism season. So, you know, to put it simple, it's an organization called Pellows, and they deal with the shit of Cornwall, you know, and they keep the shiny, beautiful Cornwall looking as good as it can do, while making sure all the shit from the businesses and stuff gets pumped and taken to the right places and stuff. But actually, again, that's an uncomfortable conversation, you know, to have the shiny, beautiful things. We've got a lot of dirty talking and a lot of shit storms that we've got to navigate. But yeah, heart, love in business and community. So my own movement for me is going from the antidote to despair for me. So broadly speaking, think of it as eco-anxiety, was action. You've heard the line, but I think Seneca, Joan Bias uses it, loads of people use it. And so I never really I had self-anxiety about being on stage and stuff. I didn't have anxiety of climate and change and the meta crisis, whatever people you want to call it. So I was always in flow. I was always in action. But I realized in 2024, when I did a talk at my own event, Goodfest, that really everything I do is my love in action, my love of people, place and stuff. The work I like is creativity. We're all creative, and it's harnessing our different forms of creative, whether it's a city planner's creativity to a bread maker's creativity to my design creativity. We've all got agency to create the change we wish to see in the world, to quote somebody else's line. Yeah. And that's it. So get in there, get connected to the heart, and then the heart, and it's all of those mycelium connections into nature and beyond, whether you're in an urban area or elsewhere, will start, I feel, to reveal. And if we can have more love in business and more action with that love, maybe, just maybe, something very beautiful will arrive for all of us that is much more equitable than the divided, you know, state of play we have on this beautiful rock hurtling through space at thousands of miles an hour.
Love it. Well, Matt, what a place to come to our natural pause. But I've loved our conversation. I really have. I've invited you in, and I'm really pleased with everything that you shared, all that wisdom, knowledge, passion, everything that you do, and the joy as well.
And a can-do mentality. We've all got the ability to be whatever our job is and our role, or where we are in society or where we live. We can be that somebody, and rather than thinking it's somebody else to do it, you know. Yeah, or somebody else can deal with the sewage, or somebody else can deal with an electric car or critical minerals or something. And actually, we've all got agency. And the best place to start is at home to self.
There we go. And that's the message to leave everyone with. So, Matt, thank you so much for joining the podcast today. Really loved having you on.
All right. No, thank you, my friend. And thank you for helping me with my mojo rising today, because I feel very uplifted just by you and your mojo magic.
There we go. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.